Hey Greg, this is Cam from Australia. For all those people who say you're a sellout for trying to charge $5 to keep the show going for even greater content, mate, they can all get fucked. Keep on keeping on. I hope you make an income. Cheers, buddy.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Higher Side Chats.
Holy hell, Higher Side Chatters, what a wonderful day it is from sunny San Diego. I'm Greg Carlwood, drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke, just trying to get my mind astrologically aligned and tuned to the messages of the great vast beyond, ready to read the orbits and trajectories of celestial bodies like the gears of the great metaphysical grandfather clock of the universe that they are. Man, this is a show that has really increased the value I put on astrology, and it's a real blast. I hope you enjoy it. I'm running low on messages, though, folks. If you want to hear yourself on THC, just leave me a message on the voicemail app at thehighersidechats.com. I'm trying to start every show with one. Bold words from today's message lever. But THC Plus signups are going great now. If you like the first hour of these shows, the second hour is just as good. The number one thing people say would make THC better is longer shows, and now you can have them. Go over to thehighersidechatsplus.com and subscribe for $5 a month. In today's second hour, Robert Phoenix does my birth chart, which is pretty interesting, and also the birth chart of Israel to extrapolate some astrological insight into the current and future state of the Middle East, and a ton of other great stuff. He also says that when he looks at upcoming astrology, Mars is going to square Pluto in the last week of August, and that is a very, very bad thing. To paraphrase him, he says something to the effect of August 25th, and the few days before and few days after, astrologically, is primed for the type of negative event to happen where you always are going to remember where you were. So, wow, be on the lookout for that. And there's some more dates and readings in the second hour about the future that are pretty crucial as well. So I'm just going to unchain this beast of a podcast episode and throw it at you. And keep in mind that the money bomb is still going. I'm getting away from numbering the shows, because we're going to be doing this for a long, long time. And we have 5 shows a month, so we're just going to pick a winner on the last show of every month. But donate a little bit, and I'll be giving half of that back to one of you guys pretty soon. Keep sending in your music to be played on the show to mymusiconthc@gmail.com. And that's about it. So brace yourself for Robert Phoenix and an in-depth and respectable look at astrology and some symbolism of the elite thrown in for good measure. Enjoy it.
Drink a little drink, my friend. Smirk a little smirk. Cause it looks like Mr. Carlwood is studying up the show. We're diving down the rabbit holes and trying to relax. I hope you're ready for the highest side chats.
Folks, for many of us, it seems pretty clear that the shadowy elite have put a lot of effort and energy into astrology, numerology, and encoding the symbols of celestial bodies deep within pop culture. And although I love to recognize patterns and decode such strangeness, I have a hell of a time trying to understand why our friendly neighborhood cabal would have so much respect and reverence for some of these so-called secret sciences that I still find a bit silly when they don't even have a fraction of that respect and reverence for the planet or humanity itself. But rather than assuming I know better than generations of scholarly secret societies, today we're going to explore these fields and the mechanisms behind them with a man who knows them better than the back of his hand. Robert Phoenix has been doing tarot, astrology, and psychic readings for over 20 years and hosts several shows across the net, a weekly broadcast on Free Association Radio and a series on GaiumTV.com called The 11th House. Well, the stars have aligned and our fates have been sealed and ignorance is in retrograde today, and I can't wait to get down to it. Robert, my man, welcome to THC.
Hey, thanks a lot, Greg. I love the name THC. That's pretty cool. It's a pleasure to be here and great to talk with you and delve into a subject that is near and dear to my heart and my mind.
Yeah, man, this is pretty exciting. I have to thank one of the listeners, Darren, who got us linked up, and I'm pretty psyched. I'm definitely open to the idea of astrology, but there are some issues that I can't quite rectify that keep me from fully embracing it. Maybe they're misconceptions, but you've been at this so long, I'm sure you've dealt with many people who weren't quite sure what to make of astrology. So how do you kind of explain it to curious skeptics?
Well, first of all, I try now, a curious skeptic is somebody who might have some interest
right.
in astrology, or, you know, somebody who has a crack in the door open. I've long since abandoned trying to convince or enlighten people that have little or no interest in anything mm-hmm. that's related to astrology or conspiracy or anything that they can't wrap their heads around from a rational point of view. I've just found it's a waste of time and energy, and it actually bleeds kind of our energy. And that doesn't mean that we have to, you know, always preach to the choir. But I think for me, it's been a really interesting process of being selective about what I share and who I share it with. And I think that this has some tie-in in some ways to people that are engaged with secret societies mm-hmm. because they don't share their energy or their secrets or their paradigms with people unless they trust them or unless there's some kind of connection. And I'm not saying that the two are mirrors of one another, but it's an interesting kind of parallel. It's not that I don't want to share this with people. If you're open to it and you want to hear it, I have plenty to say and talk about. But if the door is shut, then I'm not gonna waste my time. It's not worth it.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So in terms of what I would share, I guess I would try to ask some questions about the person. And I would try to ask some questions about their life. And then I would try to make some astrological correlations between what I would know about their chart or their star sign, and then see if we could flesh out some meaning. I'm actually pretty good at guessing people's signs when I meet them. And there's a lot of sort of telltale clues with how you can get really close to a person's astrological sign. And sometimes if I can do that, which I would say I've got a probably about a 70-80% accuracy rate with that, then people are much more open to hearing about, well, if you can do that, well, what else can you tell me, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a parlor trick, but it can be pretty effective. And so what I would try to do is I try to build a bridge between something in their lives that happened and some kind of astrological phenomena. Or I would ask them, well, what is your birthday? And then again, right around what time were you born? And that might give me an understanding about what their rising sign might be. And then I can begin to talk to them about themselves. Mm-hmm. And if some people are open to that, then they can kind of roll with it and say, well, what else can I learn about this? If they're not open to it, you know, and then we're going to go talk about cars or baseball or women or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. I guess for me, I just have a hard time rationalizing that you can extract so much information from those little things, or I have a hard time figuring out why the elite do care about these numbers and do care about astrology, because, I mean, it almost seems to me from my perspective like it's clear they care, but is it like a superstition of theirs, or is this a real magical tool? Is this a real tool of control that they use? It's tough for me to really know, but we were talking a little off air about your particular brand or style of astrology, and it seems actually a little bit different than what I would have thought. So maybe go into that a little bit and tell the people what astrology is to you versus maybe some of the more modern misconceptions of it.
Well, I practice a pretty basic form of astrology called Western Mundane Placidus. So this is based on the 12 signs, and the spiritual and the, you know, the scientific or the astrological inheritance of Ptolemy. Ptolemy lived in Alexandria, and he was an astrologer and an astronomer, and he wrote two really important treatises the Tetris Terribilis and The Alchemist. And one has to do with astrology and the other has to do with astronomy. So he was a map maker. He was brilliant. Ptolemy was brilliant. And everything about Western modern astrology comes out of Ptolemaic, sort of understanding of the universe. And he set the astrological new year calendar on 0 degrees Aries. And that's when the astrological new year begins. And then there are 12 signs across the ecliptic that we follow with 30 degrees for each sign. Thus, we get 360 degrees in the entire circle. The calendar used to be 360 degrees as well. And then, of course, they are 360 days. And then they shifted that and they added the extra days and made it a 365-day calendar. But the original calendar was an astrological calendar. So this is the system that I follow, and most modern astrologers actually follow this system as well. Now, there is another system called sidereal astrology, which is based on the constellations. And there are 13 constellations, and it changes things from a 360-degree system to actually a 230-degree system and 12 and 13 signs. So what happens with that is now we have to take into account the 13th sign, which is the sign of the serpent, Ophicus, and then everything gets pushed back a little bit through sidereal astrology. And now we're dealing with parts of Virgo being parts of Leo, parts of Libra being parts of Virgo. So everything shifts, and it's connected to the Vedic astrology and Jyotish astrology based on the number of degrees and signs, etc. So it's different. So it's practiced by a different group of people. It's practiced in a different part of the world. Now, I believe that while there are certainly Western astrological components to events, which we can clearly see and have seen, and we can get into some of this historically, I also think at times that the elite or the Illuminati or the Cabal or whatever you want to call them does practice sidereal astrology. So we're dealing with two levels of reality. We're dealing with our kind of level of reality, which is based on Western Placidus, and then they've got their own level, which maybe they're setting their own events and their own calendar on, which makes it sort of this, you know, bifurcation of two worlds, you know, that we're living in a matrix. And there's their version of the matrix, which is based on sidereal astrology, and then our version of the matrix, which is based on Western Placidus. Now, I haven't completely fleshed this out because I haven't fully looked into it. I've delved into it a little bit, but I do think that there is the potential for this to be taking place. Now, as far as why they do this, well, that's an interesting question. It happens for a couple of different reasons. One is that this is a system that goes back to, at least from what I can understand, you know, pre-Egypt, it goes back to Babylon, and I believe it goes back to Atlantis. This is where I think that astrology started, was Atlantis.
Interesting.
And then it moved eventually to Babylon. Now Babylon was started by the Exodus of the Edomites from Egypt. They were essentially kicked out of Egypt. They claim it was an Exodus, but they were kicked out, and then they infiltrated Babylon. They started this Babylonian empire. And of course, that's where Solomon reigned supreme. And then eventually we have Solomon's temple in Jerusalem. And it all happens in Babylon. And I think what occurred is that there are the twin pillars of wisdom, right? So we're talking Boaz and Yakin, mm-hmm. which came essentially from Atlantis, that the scrolls of Atlantis, the knowledge of Atlantis, or the antediluvian culture that might have been even planetary and not necessarily connected to just one continent. These scrolls were placed in these very large cylindrical tubes. And these tubes were able to survive the deluge and the flood. And they eventually washed up somewhere in North Africa. And I believe it was probably eventually they made their way to Egypt. And so these scrolls were brought into being in Egypt. The knowledge was transferred from Atlantis to ancient Egypt. And so we have this Atlantean technology that comes into play. And eventually That technology, probably even with the Ark of the Covenant, makes its way to Babylon. And part of that technology was astrology. And part of that technology was the ability to contact other forms of intelligence interdimensionally. And this is when we get into things like the Kabbalah and the Tree of Life and sacred geometry and sacred numbers and the Necronomicon. These are the portals and the gateways to interdimensional communication. Now, when you get into that realm and you get into that place, you wind up contacting fairly dark entities. You wind up contacting these kind of lower level fourth and fifth dimensional entities, and you are able to have these relationships and connections with them based on the ability to stay within the magical circle, which is sacred geometry. So you stay in your magical circle and you have this dialogue with these beings, and you try to extract information from them. This goes all the way back to Babylon. This is where the practice was started. And so what happens is that as a result of this kind of interdimensional communication, there is a whole system of magic. And much of it, to be honest with you, was black magic, which evolved out of Babylon. And some of that became part of what we would consider the realm of the secret society or the Freemasonic or the Rosicrucian realm, which was eventually rediscovered by the Knights Templar and brought back to Europe. So there's this whole kind of underground relationship to reality and interdimensional reality. And I believe astrology plays a role in that. Now, my goal has been to kind of resurrect astrology and have it be, for lack of a better term, divine. Okay, so to bring in the sacred aspect of astrology, or to bring in the Godhead when we talk about astrology. And then everything we do with astrology, whether we look at patterns, whether we look at placements or aspects, we try to resurrect the most potent capacity for astrology to change our lives, make our lives better, to make other people's lives better. But at the end of the day, we have to let that go too, you know, because there's another kind of imminent reality that's interpenetrating ours, and we can't always be in control of that reality. So astrology gives us a window into a world. It gives us potential for understanding patterns. It gives us insight into who we are. But when push comes to shove, there's the 12th house. There's the gate, the soul, and the divine. And so we have to surrender ultimately to all these systems, no matter what they are. And whether it's astrology or numerology or anyology, as far as why they do this, there's two reasons why. One is to tap into the power which they have been tapping into since Babylon, to be honest with you. So part of astrology and part of numerology and part of the relationship between the two ties them into an ancient template where they're able to tap into power, tap into these cycles where there is a heightened sense of contacting this interdimensional intelligence. That's part of it. Another part is that they're obsessive and that they need to leave clues. They need to tell us what's happening. They need to show that they're smarter than us by putting these patterns out there, you know, hiding things in plain sight. This is what they're great at doing, whether it's movies, whether it's events, whatever it is. It's like, here we go. Here is the clues that we're behind. And guess what? You know, you guys can't figure it out. It's like being at the scene of the crime, committing the crime, and then standing back on the side and watching everybody run around trying to figure out who did it, you know, and they said, look, we gave you all these clues and you still can't figure out what's going on here. Aren't we smart? This validates really our superiority over you. So that's another reason why they're engaged in these patterns and the symbolic representation of the patterns in what we would call reality.
You know, it's funny because I've also heard researchers talk about the idea that there's an element of some type of thing where they feel, the elite would feel that it clears them karmically if they are to lay out all the blueprints to their plan in plain sight. If people are too dumb to see it, that's their fault. But I think maybe they feel that it clears them karmically if they lay out those breadcrumbs.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's part of the obsessive thing, right? Mm-hmm. That we told you, so we're clear around. We let you know what's happening, so now we can go on to the next thing. And there's also a lot of power. There's a lot of power in being able to sort of, you know, paint reality a certain way, tell people about it, and then get away with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, there's, it's, it can be, I think, fairly intoxicating for some people to play that game.
I would understand why. But I've also heard you say astrology is a good tool for discovering your life path. And I have a big interest in that idea, the idea of a destiny that my consciousness chose to manifest at this time and place because it saw an interesting life to live. And then, you know, we're born with amnesia and left to figure out why we showed up here. But that's kind of a fun perspective I like to take. I don't know how much of it's based on the actual reality, but as far as astrology is concerned, I thought it was mostly about explaining personality traits and stuff like that. But how can this apply to the life path?
Well, that's a great question. And I'm a big believer and fan of evolutionary astrology. And I do believe in the concept of reincarnation, and that when we decide that we want a body, that we have the opportunity to look at who we're going to be participating with. And the life lessons that we're going to have in our life with certain people, especially our parents, which are primary life lessons. Mm-hmm. And then we hopefully can have some kind of interdimensional contact with those people so that we can come in at a particular time. And I'll share with you some personal experience because I think it's the best way to share.
Sure.
When I was actually living in San Diego, which I know that's where you're broadcasting from.
Yeah.
I was living in San Diego, and at the time I was living in corporate housing in the UTC area with my then wife at the time, and she did not really want to have kids. You know, we got married. We got married very quickly, by the way. We got married in a Las Vegas wedding. And so we were on this interesting kind of fast track. It was like the universe was pushing us along. And we were in this temporary housing waiting for our escrow to close. And she went to go see a hypnotherapist to deal with her smoking and being overweight, right? Mm-hmm. She goes to see this hypnotherapist, and about an hour and a half later, she comes back to me and she describes her time at the hypnotherapist briefly. And then she says to me, "Do you want to have a baby?" And I said, "Well, yeah, sure." And she and I'm thinking philosophically. And she said, "No, right now." Huh. And I'm like, "Oh, that's interesting. All right, well, let's go have a baby, right?" So for the next 2 days in this time period, both of us felt this energy swirling above us as we, you know, were in the act of having a baby. Mm-hmm. Or making a baby. And I knew it and she knew it, and we were having a communication with our son. And he was contacting us during this time.
Wow.
And when we were experiencing this, there was a portal that was open. And so we really had, for the most part, a conscious conception. And so fast forward that, you know, 9 months later, you know, my son is born in San Diego. Now, when you look at his chart, it's really fascinating because his moon is in Libra and my moon is in Libra. So our moons are conjunct, which means we have a great deal of simpatico. And this was, you know, again, 9 months later after we had this moment in time. So already he and I have a very strong connection based on the moon, which is emotions, right? Mm-hmm. Now, he has Saturn in the sign of Cancer, and Saturn is about form. It's about discipline. It's about structure, you know, and the Cancer is the mother. It's the nurturer. It's the womb. So here we have Saturn in Cancer, the sign of, you know, the mother in this, in the planet that gives form and structure and all this other stuff. Yeah. Right. So his mother is very big on discipline. She's very big on homework. You know, she is the person that brings the form and the structure to his life. Right. His mother is a vice president and has been a vice president of a number of internet companies. So here we have Saturn conjuncting Cancer. And Saturn is in his 12th house, which means it's an influence behind the scenes. This is an influence that he gets that nobody really understands. Now, Cancer squares his moon. The moon is Mother, right? So we have a dynamic here with the square. Saturn brings difficulty. It brings a difficulty of connection with the moon and with Mother. Now, I love his mom. She's a great mom and a nice person, but she's very invested in some other activities. She's got a strong career life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's got a strong life where she does triathlons and so she's got this whole other world, and she has enough time and enough bandwidth to be this person that gives him a roof over his head and some other stuff, which I do as well, but also the bandwidth to make sure he does well in school and all these different kinds of pieces to his life.
Right.
But she is not necessarily the person that gives him sort of more sort of traditional maternal support. Where you would look to that would be, well, where's his moon? It's in Libra. Where's my moon? It's in Libra. And I spend a lot of time with him. In fact, he's in the other room right now. So here we have the dynamic between the moon square and Saturn and his chart. What do I have in my chart? I've got a Saturn moon square as well. I had to deal with a very similar piece with my mother. She was the one that provided. My father was not in the same place, you know, as she was in terms of being able to earn. She wasn't always there for me because she was always working and doing some other stuff. You know, she, you know, helped pay the bills. She did my laundry. She, you know, she made my food. But the person who was the nurturer in my family was my father. So we're having this intergenerational experience and working this out between us. And this is a really interesting component to astrology. It's generational astrology as well. So just from my own life, I can see where these patterns begin to take place and take shape.
Mm-hmm.
In my own life, I can see it with my son's life as well. So when we incarnate, we have the template of time, which is astrology, and it lines up these various connections and the challenges and also the gifts that we get from them. And then there's also potential. There's the human potential, the potential for the individual to find themselves. And when we get into that, we look at something like the north node of the chart, which is the north node of the moon. It plays a huge role in the chart. And that's where we find where we go, where we want to put our energy, you know, where we want to put our emphasis, where we want to put our focus. I have my north node in the 10th house in the sign of Virgo, and it's conjunct my midheaven. And so the 10th house is a very public house. It's the house of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally found my niche, Greg, when I started doing my blog and my radio show and all the other stuff, which theoretically is here to serve and help other people.
Right.
And once I did that, my life started to fall into place. You know, things got easier for me. I found my direction. So if you want to find out where your direction is, you find out where your north node is. The south node, on the other hand, is where you're vulnerable. It's an area of weakness. It's where you have to work harder in some ways. And a lot of times it is a counter purpose to your north node. And so, you know, my south node is in the sign of Pisces, and it's in my fourth house. And, you know, who is a Pisces? It's my son. And, you know, so he's in my fourth house, and I have to care for him and I have to do all this fourth house stuff while I'm trying to get ahead with my true node or my north node in the 10th house. And just before we started doing this interview, mm-hmm. he came into my room and he said, can we go play catch? And I'm like, well, no, I've got to go do this interview. So here my south node comes into my bedroom and says, hey, I need some attention here. But my north node says, I got to go do this radio interview. So this is one of the interesting dynamics of astrology. Now, there are some astrologers, and I agree with this, that the south node also represents a part of your life if you believe in reincarnation. It's a past life that you've done before, and you're not here to do that past life experience now. You're here to move to the north node and find out what that is and how that impacts your life. Mm-hmm. And I do agree with that. It's worked in my life. It's played out like a movie. Saturn is another indication of what you're here to do. Saturn, again, is about form and discipline and focus, and you need to know where your Saturn is in your chart, because that's also how you're going to interact with society at large. Because that's what Saturn represents. Your Chiron is also an important factor. You want to ask a question. I'm going to stop you. I can hear you want to ask.
Oh, well, I just, you know, the listeners are hearing houses and nodes and moon squares. And I'm just wondering, like, to hear Saturn is in Cancer, like, what does that mean? I mean, I imagine some type of star map and we're laying a grid on it or something similar to that. Is
right.
Like, give us a little bit of detail on what these things might mean to the uninitiated.
So when we cast a chart, right, it's not just your sun sign, right? So when you're born, and I'll use my chart as an example, I was born at 11:55 a.m., and I was born in Europe. I was born in France. So at 11:55, the sign of Scorpio, not the constellation, but the sign of Scorpio, was rising on the ecliptic at 28 degrees, which means I'm a 28-degree Scorpio rising, okay? So we set the time by the ascendant. And the ascendant is always roughly going to be about 2 hours. Sometimes it's less, depending on the sign and where you're born on the planet. The further north you're born, the shorter the houses are in certain signs. Mm-hmm. The shorter the time is in certain signs. The longer it is in certain signs. It's all based on where you're born. So when I was born, again, 11:55 a.m. in Europe, Central European time, the sign of Scorpio is at 28 degrees rising on the ecliptic. Okay, so now I've got a 28-degree rising sign. I was born on the 22nd day of September, which puts my sun at the 29th degree of Virgo. There are 30 degrees for every sign. So I was born in the final degree, pretty much the final degree of the sign of Virgo. That places my sun all the way up near the top of my chart. Since I am a Scorpio rising, the opposite would be Taurus. And if we go up to my ninth house, that would be Leo. We go Taurus and then Gemini, Cancer, and then Leo. And then my 10th house would be Virgo. The 10th house is the midheaven. So my sun in Virgo at 29 degrees moves up to my 10th house. I also have my moon. Everybody's got a moon. They've got a sign with their moon. My moon is in the sign of Libra. So the moon was in the sign of Libra at the time that I was born. And it was there at 14 degrees. I also have Mercury in Libra. Everybody has Mercury. Everybody's got a rising sign. Everybody's got a sun sign. Everybody's got a moon sign. Everybody's got a Mercury sign. Again, Mercury was in the sign of Libra when I was born. So I have Mercury in Libra. Mercury is the planet of communication. The moon is the planet of emotion and connection and nurturing and intuition. I have Venus in the sign of Libra. Now, Venus is the planet of relationship and beauty, and it represents proportion and symmetry and creature comfort and our relationship to, generally speaking, the opposite sex. Now, everybody has a planet, has a sign in Venus. I have Mars in Cancer. Mars was at 0 degrees Cancer when I was born. So what we're looking at here based on these personal planets is a planet at a degree in time at the time that you were born. That planet by that degree, based on the rising sign and the math of the rest of the chart, gets placed in a particular house. Mm-hmm. We go all the way out to Pluto, which again, astrologers still consider Pluto a planet. Apparently astronomers have let Pluto back in as well. I have Jupiter in the sign of Sagittarius. Jupiter was in Sagittarius when I was born. That's in my first house. I have Saturn in Capricorn. That's in my second house. I have Uranus in Leo. That's in my ninth house because that's where my ninth house is. It's in the sign of Leo. Uranus gets assigned there. I have Pluto in Virgo. That's conjunct my midheaven at the end of my ninth house where my midheaven is. So it gets assigned there. It's like you're pinning it to a chart. And then I have Neptune in the sign of Scorpio, which puts it right at the end of the 11th house in my 12th house. And then you have a chart, and then you look at all those planets on that chart, and then you get to see where there's lines of confluence and harmony and lines of dissonance and conflict. And then what we begin to look at, and as an astrologer, what I see when I look at a chart, I accrue information. I see where the individual's strong points are, where their weak points are, where they can be deceived, where they can deceive themselves, where they can give help, where they can get help. And when we have that template, when we have all these planets placed in their particular houses with all the angles and the aspects coming together, it's not only a snapshot of the life, because that's what it is at the time of birth, it is also a map that is moving with time, because there are transits in the sky that are occurring right now that are impacting those planets. So it's always shifting. It's always changing. And we're always being impacted by these cycles. And mm-hmm. I have found over time and through my work, and I've done thousands of readings, that these cycles are very they're pretty pertinent. They're pretty real. You know, I mean, yeah. I went through something this last weekend which kind of blew my mind, to be honest with you. Let's go back to the 12th house, okay. Right? Currently, Mars is in the sign of Scorpio. It just went from Libra, and now it's in the sign of Scorpio. And Mars is the planet of action and dynamism and will and expression. And Scorpio is the power of the underworld. You know, it's very shamanic. It's Hades. It's intensity. Mm-hmm. It's depth psychology. It's the taboo. It's sex, right? That's Scorpio. So when Mars moves into Scorpio, we're dealing with power, issues around power. On a global level, we'll begin to see more overt power moves start to take place with mm-hmm. Mars and Scorpio. From an individual level, we'd have to look at the chart and find out where Mars is in the chart, in any given person's chart. So this weekend, my son played a baseball tournament in Texas. I live in Texas. And there was a coach in this baseball tournament. It was very hard on my son. And he'd been hard on him most of the season. And hard almost in the sense that it was personal in some ways. And I found out that this coach has Mars in Scorpio. I found this out months ago. And one of the things that I had in my own life was my father had Mars in Scorpio. Mm-hmm. And so my father's Mars is in my 12th house, which is called a hidden house. It's away from the world. And I had a very intense relationship with my father that bordered on violence at times. You know, it was very intense.
Right.
And so I had to deal with my father's intensity, and there was nobody to help me. You know, I was kind of alone and adrift in a very intense one-on-one entangled and karmic relationship with this guy. And I was a little kid most of the time too. So it was kind of intense for me. And my son was going through something very similar with this baseball coach who had kind of singled him out and was riding him psychologically and being very hard on my son. And my son was complaining to me, and I had to talk to him about it, and I had to watch the coach, you know, to make sure he wasn't crossing any lines. But I said to my son, it's like, look, you're going to run into people like this in your life, and they're going to be an adversary for you, and let's try to turn them into a worthy adversary. Let's try to learn from this. Let's try to bend and not break. And right. by the end of the summer, the season, he's going to tip your cap to you, and he's going to show you some respect, which he did. And my son was a starter in this tournament, played a very large role for the team. And about a month ago, he started to back off of my son. He realized that my son was a lot tougher than he thought. And my son was getting it. And what was really fascinating for me, Greg, was that, you know, this guy who had Mars and Scorpio in his chart was in some ways triggering my own Mars and Scorpio reaction to my own father. And seeing how this guy was on the verge of being a threat to my son, right? So my son became me. He became me. And I didn't know this or realize this until this last weekend. Why? Because Mars just went into Scorpio. And I became sort of the disembodied voice that I never had. I was the support wing that I never had for my own son to get him through this experience. Mm-hmm. So here we have Mars and Scorpio with my father, Mars and Scorpio with the coach, Mars and Scorpio moving into my 12th house, and me having a very profound kind of healing relationship with all of this. So here we see astrological cycles in action. And my son, you know, got over this. He became more empowered. He can stand on his own 2 feet. He can deal with adversity. I healed my relationship with this coach. We became friends by the time this was over. Huh. And in so doing, I healed my relationship with that part of my father, you know, who was kind of tyrannical.
Yeah, yeah.
At times even possessed, right?
Yeah.
It was a mind blower for me. So when we look at astrology, and for me as an astrologer, every day I find these correlations that can be absolutely and utterly profound.
Yeah, that's interesting, man. Those are really interesting stories. And I just wonder, what's the mechanism that makes this work? Is it just part of the fractal nature of the universe, like an as above, so below kind of thing? Like, why does it work?
Yeah, that's always really the $64,000 astrology. And, you know, there are astrologers who can flat out tell you they know how it works. And I would venture to say that they may get maybe 20% of it right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So here's my theory. I've got a couple of them. One of the theories, I looked at people who might know a little bit more about this than me, right? So one of those people was Edgar Cayce. Mm-hmm. And Edgar Cayce basically channeled, you know, a lot of material, and he channeled material around astrology. And what Cayce basically said was that each of the planets had its own vibration, had its own frequency, had its own ability to interpenetrate our life experience here on this planet. If everything is connected, if we're dealing with waves of influence, then the planets themselves have waves of influence in our lives. And those waves of influence can be physical. Like, for instance, when we have a super moon, Jim Birkeland is a pretty famous geologist, and he's made correlations between the super moon and earthquakes. And we just had a super moon, and guess what? We just had an earthquake, right?
Right.
So we can see that when the moon is close, that it has an effect on us. So when other planets get close, they theoretically would have an effect on us as well, especially planets like Venus or Mercury or Mars or the moon, because they're close. The outer planets tend to have less of an effect on us personally, although they do at times, but they certainly have an impact on us collectively because they take a longer time to go from one sign to another. So there's the vibrational relationship with the planets and their influence. And Cayce even ascribed spiritual influence to the planets as well. He's got this whole theory where when you pass on, you go to the various planets and you study on these planets. You get to learn things. And then you bring back the incarnational energy from those planets, and they're actually hardwired into the chart. Now, that's Cayce's theory. And I think that there's some validity to that. Mm-hmm. So we're dealing with the vibrational nature of the planets themselves. You know, what's interesting too, Greg, is when we look at a planet like Saturn, and I just was tripping on this the other day. Saturn is a very fascinating planet because it relates to the name Satan, right?
And the elite love to reference Saturn in their symbolism.
Absolutely, we look at the hypercube symbolism. You know, you go to Mecca, and you've got the Kaaba, mm-hmm. right, which is this massive black cube. You know, that is a shrine to Saturn. That's right. What that is.
2001: A Space Odyssey.
Absolutely. So Saturn is a big deal. And with the word Saturn, we are connected to the word El, which, of course, we get the word elite from. So Saturn's a fascinating planet in and of itself. And when you look at Saturn, you look at the ring around Saturn. And you think about that, you go, well, isn't that fascinating? Here we have this sphere, and yet, in some ways, it is kind of in a cage. You know, there is this thing around it, this band around it, which keeps it sort of, in some ways, locked in.
Yeah, and so
when we think of Saturn, we think of locked in energy, right? So the planet itself actually gives us a kind of a geometrical relationship to the energy of the planet. Saturn also has this very strange hexagonal pole up on the north part of it. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
I've heard about that referenced. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a very, and it rotates, and there's massive storms in this hexagon, right? This piece of sacred geometry up at the top part of Saturn. So the planet itself gives us this interesting symbolic representation. Pluto is very close to being the second sun. It's primarily gas. And it's very expansive. When we think about Pluto, we think about Jupiter, and Jupiter is connected to Jehovah, and Jehovah is connected to Yahweh. So here we have Satan and Yahweh right there with Saturn and Jupiter, right? Very mm-hmm. interesting sort of relationship between the two. And Satan and Yahweh, or Satan and Jehovah, you know, they have their connection here on this planet, and that gets played out in other kinds of interesting representations like Enlil and Enki, you know, the Sumerian gods, creation gods, and, you know, they have their own kind of, you know, Yahweh, satanic kind of connection to creation. Mm-hmm. So the planets themselves have their own stories and their own mythologies. And those mythologies, I think, also influence, you know, how we feel and how we think and how we react. So that's one kind of another kind of sort of, you know, realization or some kind of answers to how this how this stuff works. Another version of this is, and this is something I also ascribe to as well, is that it's a matrix, man. And we have been playing with astrology since Ptolemy and probably before that. And so as a matrix and as a system, we have invested a lot of time, a lot of attention, a lot of energy, and it becomes in some ways a self-perpetuating system.
Yes.
So we have helped create that with our own intention, mm-hmm. right?
I get that.
So it's that's another reason as to why it's a program. And so we're dealing with a program as well. So there's a number of different vectors as to how or why this works. There's also the kind of the Jungian piece around synchronicity and the collective unconscious.
Right.
And this is another kind of window onto the collective unconscious and synchronicities. And synchronicities are a huge factor in astrology. So there's a number of different ways that we can come at this and begin to get some kind of idea as to how and why this works.
Now, you mentioned synchronicities, and I wanted to ask you about the Chinese zodiac, because you wrote one piece that I really loved, and I've been kind of talking about this stuff as I picked up on it here and there for a couple of months now, but this is the year of the horse in the Chinese zodiac, and there seems to be a ton of fascinating and strange coincidences or references to the horse or Neptune that are going on this year. And I wonder if it's that same thing. Is it manifesting because in our collective unconscious, we're thinking year of the horse, or is the elite just trying to make some dots connect? But there seems to be some strange things going on. And I wanted to see if you would talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating because it all really kind of got kicked off just around the Super Bowl with the Denver Broncos.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the Broncos are represented by a horse. And then we had, you know, the Super Bowl being played in New York, which was really unusual. It was the first time that it's been played in New York. And just before the eve of the Super Bowl, Philip Seymour Hoffman died. Mm-hmm. And he died with a heroin overdose. And the street name for heroin is called Horse. And there's a lot of really interesting kind of horse connections around that time as well. Katy Perry, I think the week before, had debuted her video. The name escapes.
Dark Horse.
That's right. Dark Horse. Right at the same time. Now, you have to ask yourself, right, is this something that's programmed? Mm-hmm. And I would have to say 100% absolutely. Now, did somebody sit down in a room and say, hey, we're going to kill Philip Seymour Hoffman the night before the Super Bowl, and it's going to have all this esoteric meaning? Not necessarily. I don't think that that's the case. Although I do think that there are events where people are killed during certain times, and JFK being one of them.
Yes.
But I think that when we get into these vectors, and these vectors have their own kind of energy, their own templates, and their ritual vectors. And that's when they get energized by either astrology or numerology. Now, the Chinese piece is fascinating because the year of the horse the horse itself is considered to be the sign of Gemini in the West. And the rat is considered to be the sign of Sagittarius in the West. And I get into a lot of symbolism in my work around the sign of Gemini, which is about polarization. Mm-hmm. And we are living in the time of depolarization. And the polarization piece is intentional and being programmed so that at some point in time there can be an exerted effort to bring the polarized factions of the world together and have one unified system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The only way that unified system works is when polarity is at an extreme. Mm-hmm. Because if polarity is not an extreme, people will not necessarily recognize that. And so when we have this one unified system coming in to save the day, whether it's the New World Order, the North American Union, whatever that is, it exists because the polarity is so intense.
That's interesting.
And so when we have the year of the horse, what we have is we have the year of polarity.
Yeah.
Because it's translated into Gemini in the Western system. And in the sky, right, we have what's called the galactic center. And the galactic center is right around 28 degrees Sagittarius right now. And the galactic center moves very, very, very slowly. So the galactic center is at 28 degrees Sagittarius. Well, what's on the other side of that? Well, it's Gemini. So if you want to tap into something that splits us apart or makes us have these, you know, fractionalized factions, you would want to tap into the other side of the galactic center and Gemini. And there's plenty of Gemini symbolism in the world that is, you know, pretty profound, to be honest with you. When the Twin Towers went down, I mean, that was a Gemini cold vent.
Yeah. Right? And I wanted to talk to you about that, but I wanted to throw just a couple more logs on the year of the horse fire that I thought were interesting because it comes up to a current event that I wanted to ask you about. But, you know, Neptune is the god of the sea, but also the god of horses. So we see a lot of Neptune stuff. There was a Neptune statue at the Olympics. You could consider the premiere of Noah to be some manifestation.
Very Neptunian.
And also Malaysian Airlines, they have a trident symbol, and the trident is, of course, tied to Neptune. And I was curious if you had any more details as to, like, that strange connection. The Malaysian Airlines, we see one plane missing, one plane crashed. Something definitely seemed to be up, and I know you've looked at that from an astrological standpoint. I wondered if you had any kind of insight to it.
Yeah, what's really interesting is I think this whole Neptunian piece actually started with the running aground of the Concordia, and the Concordia is in the news right now because it's finally being righted and being taken to a scrapyard.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so you know the ship I'm talking about, right? Now the Concordia, to me as an event, represented the end of the age of Pisces, which is ruled by Neptune and the sea. And all of this Neptunian symbolism, to me, is the death of the age of Pisces. And when we go with the precession of the equinoxes, the next constellation, or the next sign for that matter, would be Aquarius. And so what we're seeing here is these events which signal the death of the age of Pisces, because the powers that be want to move us into the age of Aquarius.
Mm-hmm.
When we move away from the age of Pisces, we move away from the age of Jesus, because Jesus, you know, represented self-sacrifice, compassion, love thy neighbor, the relationship between man and deity. You know, this was the whole notion of Jesus is incredibly Piscean. It's mystical. It is taking the information or the transmission from the Father, Mother, God, and living with it on a day-to-day basis. There's no middleman. There's just you and it, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the life of Jesus represented in a lot of ways. Now, where we're headed is the age of Aquarius, and they are trying to create a formal end to the age of Pisces. And the age of Aquarius is very, very different. On one level, it's kind of cool, right? It's like, you know, hey, we're all one. We recognize our oneness. You know, there's strength through diversity. I mean, all these interesting kinds of Aquarian tropes and memes.
Yeah.
But there's a dark side, a very dark side to Aquarius. And I talk about that in my work. And it's kind of unpopular in some ways because, you know, people call me cynical because I'm pointing out the shadow of Aquarius, which are things like transhumanism, the inception of robots into our culture, science gone too far, cloning, RFID chips, you know, the Borg mind, which is being connected to a massive supercomputer through RFID chips and technology. These are all very Aquarian notions. Ray Kurzweil, the new god, the new transhumanist god of the Aquarian Age, Aquarianism as a form of socialism, where there's this top-down kind of oligarchic rule, not in the same way that socialism emerged during the Russian Revolution, but this strange hybrid of socialism and government and corporations, the corporocratic rule. Mm-hmm. You know, this is in some ways also this kind of dark Aquarian sort of time that we're moving towards, the breakdown of the family, the in a lot of ways, the exaltation of the individual, but it's the exaltation of the individual that is kind of shallow in some ways. Uh-huh. You know, it's the emergence of the selfie in pop culture.
Yeah.
You know, these are all really, you know, very thin and flimsy examples of promoting individuality, but it's not really true individuality. It's individuality that's being propped up by social networking, all very Aquarian kinds of pieces. So in order for them to bring on the Aquarian Age, the one world government, they have to end the Age of Pisces. They have to kill religion. They have to dismantle Christianity. And so this Neptunian symbolism that comes into play is a sign that that's happening. What they're doing, you know, so if you look at, right, let's take the Malaysia flight.
Sure.
Okay. Flight 370, Malaysia Flight 370, it's lost over the ocean. Mm-hmm. Now, nobody knows what happens to it. It's a mystery. Right. It's a mystery. So to me, what that speaks to, and I'm going to bring in some astrology here, that's the 12th house. That's the house that rules Neptune and Pisces. And when we talk about the 12th house as an astrologer, we use language like hidden and hard to know and mystery. You know, the 12th house is ruled by Pisces and oceans and opium and alcohol and insane asylums and prisons and brothels and hospitals, all these institutions that we cannot wrap our heads around because we don't see them. Mm-hmm. So when 370 went down or out or whatever happened to it, it literally evaporated into the 12th house, a complete mystery.
Huh.
But it was Pisces, though, because we see the Neptune, we see the trident, we see Neptune in the trident, and again, lost over an ocean.
Yeah.
When do we see the next Malaysian flight occur? We see it go down in Ukraine, right? Ukraine.
Right.
Now, if you know anything about the old Ukrainian flag, it has a trident in it.
Wow.
It has a trident in it. And it goes down. It hits the earth. It comes crashing down. There is death. There is destruction. They talk about the bodies on board that flight being diseased and, you know, corpulent.
Right, yeah. They were like, they were dead way before the plane was shot.
Way before the whole thing, right? So this is a death ritual. This is a death ritual. And we have to look at Neptune and Pisces as a result of this. And what are they trying to do? Well, they're trying to pin this on Russia.
Right.
This is a Piscean scapegoat kind of tactic and strategy. So while they're crashing this Piscean symbol and turning it into death, they're also employing this Piscean Russian scapegoat thing, like Jesus is the scapegoat, right? So Putin is the new scapegoat. Russian is the new scapegoat. And now we get to maybe have a nice world war around that. and what is advancing all of this? It's the media. The media is advancing this. Television is advancing this. That's an 11th house medium, by the way. We're talking about this right now through the internet, which is an 11th house medium. So, you know, there's a lot taking place and taking shape around this that is very Aquarian as a result of it. Now, the whole goal here is to completely dismantle the Piscean Age, to get rid of it, to get rid of the notion of Christianity or Catholicism, lump a few other religions in there as well. And then we have a new age, which is an Aquarian age, which we're all one. We're all living under a banner of a new world order or whatever that thing is. We're all connected through technology, and we're all tracked by technology as well, mm-hmm. via the NSA or whatever. So there's no escaping. You know, technology becomes our new god. You know, it's kind of like in the Piscean age, you couldn't get away with anything because God was omnipresent and omniscient. and looking everywhere at who you are and what you were doing. But in the Aquarian age, that God's been replaced by the eye in the sky or the mic in the box. That's the new God. So if you're going to sin or you're going to do something that is contrary to the modern template, well, it's going to be found out about, and you're going to suffer some form of trial or some form of retribution. You know, maybe you go spend purgatory in some FEMA camp somewhere. So these things are getting translated now to the 11th house in Aquarius. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating to see what's taking place. And people will go along with this to some degree if they are enticed long enough to do so, right? Mm-hmm. They're either going to be coerced or enticed. And the enticement is through technology and cool shit. You know, make it easier, make it faster, make it more fun. Yeah, I'll go along with it. Oh, give me a chip if I can speak five different languages. You know, turn me into a zombie and whenever you want, but let me speak five different languages, whatever that thing is.
Yeah.
So, but is that really the new Aquarian age? I posit that there's something else.
Right.
There's a different kind of Aquarian age.
Yeah.
You know, that is based on really different kinds of values of self-determination,
mm-hmm.
and one's own personal liberty, and that everybody gets to have a shot at it. Not, you know, and what's really weird is that, you know, there would be this theoretically synthetic version of oneness, but there's always going to be a top-down relationship, right? Mm-hmm. There's always going to be somebody running the show.
Right.
You know, that's the way it was in communist Russia, or even to this day, this weird hybrid of capitalism and communism or socialism in China. There's guys running the show there.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's going to be this full-on kind of, you know, Garden of Eden party, you know, with rainbows and unicorns in the 11th house. So I think there's a different kind of reality that we can have. And I think right now that it's a war perception and a war of reality when it comes to this Piscean piece. There's other Piscean Neptunian horse stuff going on as well. If you go to the One World Trade Tower, which is the rectification of duality and the whole one world symbol, right?
Yeah.
They've used portions of the World Trade Center, which look like tridents inside of the memorial, the 9/11 memorial.
Mm-hmm.
So here again, they're kind of, you know, they're resurrecting Neptune and turning Neptune into kind of a spiritual relic in some ways.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I actually had a guest on not long ago, Kent Bain. He wrote a book, The Most Dangerous Book in the World, and it's all about the Twin Towers and the occult symbolism in them. And he actually says there were tridents in the original Twin Towers, which that almost alludes to the fact, the very scary idea, that they might have been built with sacrifice in mind from the beginning.
I did a lot of work on 9/11 at one point in time to try to really wrap my head around it, look at dates and numbers, and to the best of my knowledge, the Twin Towers were mostly hollow for the most part. They had offices and buildings on the upper floors, but the buildings themselves were erected to fall at some point in time.
Yeah.
And if indeed and I would have to look at sort of what was happening architecturally then. But if those tridents were a structural anomaly, then I would say that your author is correct, and that it was part of an event and a system that would go down in time. Well, let's stay with this a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So I picked up a post that I did, which was 9/11, Jesus' birthday, Summer of Love, and Jupiter in Cancer.
Yes, I love that one. That's a good
and
one.
And I did a show on Gaiam TV where there are certain people inside of the Christian community who believe that Jesus was not born on 1225. And I would agree with them, by the way. I don't believe that is the birth date of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
To the best of my knowledge, from what I was able to kind of wrap my head around, 9/11 looks like the actual birth date of Jesus.
Wow.
And if you go back in time and you see all of the events that took place on 9/11, whatever 9/11 it was, whatever it, through history, those events would absolutely blow your mind.
Yeah.
And I did a whole list of, I don't have them in front of me there, but there are quite a few of them. And obviously there were a number of atomic explosions that happened on 9/11. So, you know, when they do these above ground tests, and some of them were below ground, you know, these atomic explosions did a couple of things. If they were below ground, my sense was is they were like hollowing out massive areas for deep underground bases.
Yes, yeah, they did definitely have those.
And above ground, I think they were opening portals with the above ground atomic blasts. So if indeed Jesus was born on 9/11, then wouldn't it make sense that there would be tridents inside these twin towers?
Yeah, it kind of does.
And that the destruction would occur on 9/11, signaling the end of the Piscean Age and the beginning of the Aquarian Age, which was obviously the One World Trade Center. And what's fascinating is if you look at 9/11, the day that it happened, the moon was in the sign of Gemini, which is the sign of the twins and the twin towers. And the day that the 9/11 museum opened was the first day of Gemini. So we have the moon and the sun together, moon and Gemini, sun and Gemini. That's the alchemical marriage, by the way, sun and moon and Gemini. You can't tell me that they picked that date arbitrarily. That date was nailed to a wall, 0 degrees Gemini. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to erect a building, which is essentially a massive telluric tower pulling in these energies. And by the way, we've got these tridents from the old building inside. We have a reverse Kaaba. If you've seen sort of the water area, that's part of the Memorial Park.
Oh, right on.
It is a sunken black hypercube.
Wow.
So it's a hypercube that's sunken, but it's reversed, right? It's usually above ground.
Yeah.
But it's below ground. And that's where there's water, which is Piscean, right? But they're taking that and they're flipping it. You know, they're basically encasing it with Saturn, because mm-hmm. that's the hypercube. So with Saturn encasing the water with this reverse hypercube, hyperdimensional cube, they're saying that we rule Pisces. We rule water. This is our domain. Right. And we tell you. And now also, too, I don't know if you've been following this at all, Greg, but there's a lot of news. There's a lot of buzz right now around water, especially what you're experiencing in California.
Yep.
With the drought. We're talking about water as the new oil. You know, the guy from Nestle wants to privatize all the water.
Right. You can get free Wi-Fi, but you can't get free water.
That's right. And what's happening in Detroit? They're cutting people off. You know, and so where is the symbolic representation of that? Well, it's happening right there at the One World Trade Tower with the reverse hypercube, Saturn enclosing water, enclosing Pisces. We rule water.
Wow, man.
And by saying that, what are they also saying? They're saying, we rule your emotions. We rule your spirituality. We rule everything. Mm-hmm. So, there's a lot going on there with that structure, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's massive. It really is saying, hey, we're going to build this thing. We're gonna build it, and it's going to represent this one world experience that we have all planned out for you. And we're going to put it on the first day of Gemini, which means that, you know, we're screwing with you, because it's still about duality, you know, but you don't know that. You know, we're still playing with this whole meme, and yet we're trying to bring you into this kind of, you know, this manifestation of, you know, this synthetic oneness.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a lot going on with this whole Neptunian kind of horse related stuff. It's very, very powerful.
Very awesome, man. This has been one of my favorite shows. Your passion is very contagious, and I'm super intrigued about astrology even more so, to give it a more serious look and maybe do that groundwork of knowledge that's really necessary. But man, there's so much more I'd like to talk to you about in terms of movies and Hollywood celebrities and alignments and dates. So hopefully we can do this again sometime, because I really enjoyed your talk. But before we go, you want to give people a little more knowledge about your website and your work and where they can keep up with you?
Sure. So my website is robertphoenix.com, and that's where I do my blogging and I write. And I did a 23 episode series for Gaiam TV called The 11th House, where a lot of these ideas are talked about, and there's great visuals. And you can go to my website. You can sign up for Gaim. You can watch those 23 episodes if you want. You get a week free. Maybe you want to watch all 23 in a week and do a Netflix thing with it and then and bounce off. That's completely up to you. But you can sign up and get those there. And then I have my, my radio show, which I do on Mondays, called Free Association Radio. Actually, Mondays are is 11th House Radio. And then on Fridays, I do the Friday Farcast, and they're all part of Free Association Radio. And I interview guests like you do on my Friday show. So I put on a different hat. But for the astrology stuff, it's Mondays, my radio show. You can find that on Blog Talk, my blog, robertphoenix.com. And I do some stuff on Facebook and Twitter.
Awesome, man. And you got some great Jay Widener talks, too. So definitely check those out, people, if you liked when we had Jay Widener on. I think he's a great, great guest as well. So the two of you guys together, pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But it's been an honor and a pleasure, man. Hey, take care of yourself out there, all right?
Thank you very much, Greg. And I've had a great time talking with you.
Boom, people. There it is. I loved that show. I'm definitely going to be keeping tabs on the work of Robert Phoenix, and hopefully we'll get him on again in a few months and see if we're all still standing. I really liked Robert's breakdown of astrology and the little 101 lesson that started us off with his personal examples, also the elite's use of it, and all the wild symbolism around the Year of the Horse, as well as the Malaysian Airlines death ritual and the opening of portals with nukes. Man, we covered a lot of ground in that free show. And then in the Plus show, we talked about JFK, LSD, 9/11, and the Gemini program, and the flipping of the timeline into a dark version of the Age of Aquarius, and the Saturn connections. My God, Saturn just keeps coming up. So I love to hear Robert point out even more examples of it, and some of the astrological meanings to structures like the One World Trade Center. Oh, and the Israel birth chart contained a lot of interesting info, didn't it? I even thought my birth chart was pretty accurate in a few of my tendencies and very positive for the future of THC. So let's manifest that for the people who aren't signed up. There's already 3 great extra hours of conspiracy goodness for just $5 a month over at thehiresidechatsplus.com. Everybody needs to be on the lookout for extreme violence and intensity on or around August 25th. Might be a good day to lay low and spend some time with the people you love. Maybe treat them a little nicer this week, just in case. I actually got a lot of positive emails from my little rant a few weeks ago about taking a day off for yourself, and I figured I'd at least read one of them here. It goes, Mr. Carlwood, hello, sir. My name is Steve. I'm the co-host of another podcast called The League of Geeks with a Z. I really wanted to write you and express how fucking amazing and mind-blowing your show is. Your Sandy Hook episode especially messed me up, in a good way, kinda. Anyway, your journey and message is inspiring to us all, and while I can't quit my 9-to-5 right now, I did take your advice and call out of work and spend a whole day doing something for me, bettering myself, working on my passion. It was truly a much-needed break and breath of fresh air. Thank you, sir. Keep fighting the good fight. Well, thank you, sir, Steve. And all the folks out there like you, I've been told the best approach to living in this messed up world is to have 1 foot in the game and 1 foot out. And I think that rings pretty true. You can't totally detach from something that is this infiltrated into our culture, but you can't keep yourself so stressed out that you can't take a break from it either. That said, guys, keep sending in your voicemails and music. It's fun to get the listeners on the show and help out artists that are looking for a stage. In fact, today we're going to be ending the show with a song called Say from the appropriately named band Lions Named Leo. What an astrologically sound band name. And they're from Bakersfield and are fighting the good fight with the weapon of art, just like all of us should be in some way, inspiring the change that we were naive to think was coming from the top down. But be ready, people, because THC is coming from the ground up, and you're all coming with me. That's it for this week. I've done my part, and we've seen the astrological roadmap of 2014. So it's your move, puppet masters. Your fucking move.